coming to you not exactly live from
the Clefts of Insanity,
Indiana Jill.
You have chosen wisely.
Hey everybody, it's time for another episode, a scant week later. Oh my goodness, this has been a busy month. Got an announcement to make. Not gonna have anything in June, okay? Pretty much gonna kind of take a while off since I've done a lot of these shows. I might have an episode out June 1st if there's any other big developments coming out after Celebration 4, which is wrapping up today, which is Monday. Because I've got Con Carolinas coming up, and then I'm gonna kind of take a break and breathe a little bit. This is kind of starting to run me ragged a little bit, and next week I have a 3-day work week at work, and plus preparations for Con Carolina, so it's going to be pretty busy. My friend Tony over at FanboySmackDown.com, their podcast, which is Fanboy Smackdown, are having a Star Wars The Legacy Revealed prize pack. I don't know what all is included in this prize pack. A t-shirt, probably. I don't know if they're giving away or if they're even allowed to give away the screener copy of The Legacy Revealed, which is the new documentary from the History Channel, all about what Star Wars means to our culture and means in our culture. So if you just go to FanboySmackDown.com, they'll have the rules there in their blog post from the 22nd, May 22nd, the Star Wars Legacy Revealed prize pack, and they have the details in that. All you do is send an email to fanboysmackdown@gmail.com. Make sure the word contest is in the subject line. Include your mailing address and tell them how you found out about the contest. And let them know if you're a regular listener to their podcast or not. So there is that. I was going to have a review of that documentary, but Tony wasn't able to get it to me. We kind of missed each other in Skype. When he was there, I was not, and vice versa. So get over there and check out their show. StarWars.com has just relaunched, and it's a pretty nice looking website. There's some new features in there, including user-generated videos. If you're a paid Hyperspace member, you can create your own Star Wars video mashups with your videos. They provide the editing tool right there online for you. And also what I liked is on the original trilogy, they have kind of a side-by-side comparison thing where you can look at the differences between the old version and the special editions. And I did discover by looking at this that George Lucas's intent in releasing the very, very old original versions of the movies, it wasn't just to say, okay, fine, here you go, you're complaining, now let me give you the versions that you want. No, that wasn't George's. He wasn't insulting everybody by giving you the uncleaned up version. What they did was provide the old uncleaned up version so you could compare the differences between that and the special editions. What that tells me is I think there may be something in the works and another release that might have the cleaned up original, but you never know, and probably not. Who knows? The guys over at theforce.net also have a compilation of about 100 links to other websites that are covering the 30th anniversary of Star Wars, all with different kind of bents to them. And it's a really, really big list, and I would get over there to theforce.net and check it out. If you're not going to theforce.net for all your news, you just don't have all the details on Star Wars. The Yoda stamp at the Postal Service website has won the voting competition, USPSJediMaster.com. So he narrowly edged out Darth Vader. Now, one of the coolest... Actually, there are two very cool details unleashed, as it were, at Celebration 4. One is on the game The Force Unleashed. What we have is the game takes place between episodes 3 and 4. The specific block of time the game actually covers is longer than a typical movie. The game takes place over several years and includes several distinct passages of time. Yoda appears in one part, as well as a few other familiar characters throughout the course of the adventure. The main character in the game was inspired by Lucas himself. It is the story of a Force user that escaped Order 66 and survived the Clone Wars. They kept mentioning how the character is very much samurai-inspired. What we do know about the character, I've read in other sources, is that They were not trained between the dark and the light side. They're kind of, they use the dark side sort of as a blunt tool, but he's a decent guy, and that's kind of what I've heard. Now, the other really cool detail is if you go to StarWars.com, you will see a teaser trailer for the Clone Wars animated cartoon. They have not found a TV home for it, but it is done in the computer-generated 3D style. But it puts things like Transformers Armada and Jimmy Neutron to shame. Now, Jimmy Neutron, obviously, is kind of a goofy cartoon. The shading in this movie, it almost looks like the actual CG from the movies, except you can tell it's a cartoon. It's not really that much different, though. For instance, like things like General Grievous and R2-D2 looks very, very close to the way the film looks. And I wouldn't say they're photorealistic, because the characters kind of have... They're very similar to that style that Genndy Tartakovsky used for the little Clone Wars mini-series thing on the Cartoon Network, but a little more rounded edges, and just all around looks better. There are some pretty cool videos over at YouTube. Found these via aintitcool.com, Ain't It Cool News. So three videos that are worth checking out. As always, the Vader sessions are very much worth checking out. Pretty funny using James Earl Jones' voice from other movies over scenes with Darth Vader in them. And finally, I realize I don't sound like my normal cheery self. That's because in my closet, there's no airflow. So, number one, I'm pretty hot. Number two, I've had to re-record this particular part of the show. And I'm just tired. I'm kind of worn out. We've got a short week next week. And, well, I think I already said that, and I'm just blah, you know, at this point. So, we're going to take a break and have a short promo, and then the segment that I had planned for this show, which is, what is that segment that I had planned? The Plot Hole Menace, which should be exciting. So, anyway, this is episode 2, and we'll be back after this short break.
When it comes to computers, I have software that's reliable, an operating system that's stable, and a work environment that is not only productive, but a lot of fun. How typical. The typical Mac user with Victor Cajal. If you're a Mac user, a switcher, a slider, or just someone who wants to know what this Apple cult is all about, subscribe today at www.typicalmacuser.com.
A lot of things that people see as plot holes or continuity errors in Star Wars. And I think most, if not all, can be easily explained just using a little bit of critical thinking and using one's imagination a little bit. The whole point of Star Wars is to open up your imagination, right? That's what it did for us as kids when we played with the toys and we watched the movies and we all dreamed about using the Force. It was a vehicle for our imagination. And I think somewhere along the way, about the time that the prequels began coming out, we lost sight of our imaginations. And a lot of us were jaded by the prequels and by things that George Lucas changed, and certain things that we see from the prequels as contradictions with what happened in the original trilogy. So, using things from official continuity, the movies, I'm going to try my best to explain away some of these plot holes and some of these continuity errors. So, turn up the volume and open up your mind. It's time to refute the plot hole menace. First off, let's take the question, what was the point of hiding Luke Skywalker under his real last name? Oh, this one's fairly easy, I think. Living on Tatooine is not going to garner anyone much exposure, especially Luke, who spent most of his time on the moisture farm, and his only exposure with the outside world, really, was trading with Jawas, or going to Anchorhead or Tashi Station for the things that they needed. There's no Imperial presence on a rim world like Tatooine, so what are the chances that Vader's going to hear about him? We already know that Anakin's dealing with the regrets of the following: not saving his mother in time, letting Palpatine kill Mace Windu, presumably accidentally killing his wife and unborn children, and never getting that ability to save his dying loved ones. So why is he going to stop by Tatooine where he left his mom in the first place? And we already know he had the opportunity because even on the Tantive IV, Vader says she must have hidden the plans in the escape pod. He doesn't say anything about droids. They don't find out it's droids until the stormtrooper says, "Look, sir, droids." He had plenty of time, plenty of chance to come down to Tatooine, but he didn't. And so we have to assume that he's not going to any other time.
"You will go to the Dagobah system.
Dagobah system.
There you will learn from Yoda, the Jedi Master who instructed me."
So here we have an Empire Strikes Back. Obi-Wan says that Yoda was the Jedi Master who instructed him, but in Episode 1, he's got Master Qui-Gon Jinn. Well, what's the whole point of that? Well, Yoda probably was a Jedi Master that instructed him, considering Yoda seems to be the one guy to teach the younglings. So we have to assume that Yoda was teaching Obi-Wan when he was a youngling. So it's really true from a certain point of view. He knows that training as a Jedi is hard and makes a person think more than once about going back. So how easy would it be for Luke to say, "Well, how do I know you're the right Jedi Master for me? Because you're only one of Obi-Wan's Jedi Masters who instructed him." We know Luke is a curious person. Everything Yoda and Ben do is for the purpose of not inviting more questions from Luke. Even in Return of the Jedi, when Yoda's dying, he's still reluctant to confirm that Vader is Luke's father. Why? Because they know that Luke's curiosity could distract him from his course. Could take him off the planned course for him that Obi-Wan and Yoda have set out with him. And it's not as though Obi-Wan just stumbled upon Luke and decided, "Hey, why don't we do something with you, kid?" It was his and Yoda's plan from the very beginning. Because their whole MO with Luke is to keep him from having more questions. So let's kind of analyze this and go through this a little bit, and you'll see what I mean. For instance, in A New Hope, a lot of people get on the whole Obi-Wan's house thing, or scene, where Obi-Wan tells Luke certain things from a certain point of view that we now see are not exactly correct. First of all is this one.
"Now let's see if we can't figure out what you are, my little friend, and where you come from."
You know, it appears right off the bat that Obi-Wan doesn't recognize the droids, though he clearly had plenty of contact with them beforehand. I don't think, really, that Episode 4 is making the case that Obi-Wan does not recognize the droids. I think he fully recognized the droids. But the thing is, he's trying to keep Luke from knowing too much. I know that he does say,
"I don't seem to remember ever owning a droid."
But for a Jedi, possession is forbidden. Ownership of anything is frowned upon. R4 was merely an asset of the New Republic military issued to General Kenobi, not owned by regular Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. In fact, the only thing that he says that Luke does not hear is,
"Come here, my little friend. Don't be afraid. Oh, don't worry, he'll be all right."
See? He's already his little friend. He knows him. You know, you can't determine from that statement that he doesn't recognize the droid. Sure, he's surprised to see him, but everything in front of Luke is need-to-know basis. I don't think he has a problem knowing who R2-D2 is or who C-3PO is.
"Your father wanted you to have this when you were old enough, but your uncle wouldn't allow it."
"What is it?"
"Your father's lightsaber."
How would Anakin know Luke is alive in the first place? He wouldn't. He wasn't killed by a Jedi named Darth Vader who turned to evil either, so he's not making the case that Anakin was alive. There is no continuity there, error there.
"I haven't gone by the name of Obi-Wan since before you were born."
Technically, who were the last people to see Obi-Wan after Luke was born? Yoda, Bail Organa, and Captain Antilles. And we don't even know that Captain Antilles knew Yoda or Ben were on board. But presumably all personnel at the asteroid facility, which may have been mostly droids, and aboard the Tantive IV, only knew of him as Master or General Kenobi. Yoda even simply calls him Master Kenobi in the last scene with dialogue from Episode 3. So, technically, from a certain point of view, he didn't go by that name since before Luke was born. Now, at the end of Revenge of the Sith on the Tantive IV, Yoda says,
"Until the time is right, disappear we will."
And he also says in Empire,
"This one, a long time have I watched. All his life has he looked away to the future, to the horizon, ever his mind on where he was, what he was doing."
Then in Return of the Jedi, Obi-Wan says to Luke,
"The Emperor knew, as I do, if Anakin were to have any offspring, they would be a threat to him."
See, the remaining Masters of the Jedi Council, who were Obi-Wan and Yoda, had a plan. All along, their plan was to use Anakin's offspring to defeat the Sith. The secrecy of the plan was critical to its success, and especially how much Luke knew. Because the more he knows, the more distracted he gets by the whole thing. Ultimately, at the end, he says, "I can't kill my own father." You know, he doesn't want to go through with it at the end. So to throw the truth at him at this stage would botch the whole thing before it got started. For Obi-Wan to say, "Oh, hey, it's about time you brought these droids. Hey, by the way, your dad's really the most notorious Jedi killer, most powerful Sith Lord, and most ruthless tyrant in galactic history. And oh, by the way, you're going to kill him." Can we give Obi-Wan just a little bit of credit for his misinformation technique? Here's another question, getting out of the Obi-Wan and New Hope portion. How did Luke know he could contact Leia after his duel with Vader in Cloud City? He didn't know yet that she was his sister. No, but desperate men will resort to desperate measures in desperate situations. And I'd say hanging upside down with your hand cut off and being humiliated and Obi-Wan can't help you, who else is he going to try to contact? That's just one of those dramatic Hollywood miracle moments. Let's put it that way. Now, what about Leia? What about her memory of her mother? Because in Return of the Jedi, we have this.
"Leia, do you remember your mother? Your real mother?"
"Just a little bit. She died when I was very young."
"What do you remember?"
"Just images, really. Feelings."
"Tell me."
"She was very beautiful, kind, but sad."
So how could Leia have any memory of Padme? Episode 3 confirms that she died shortly after giving birth, and to some this is a glaring continuity error, saying that there's obvious ignorance of a plot hole here. Now, first of all, Leia never really says she actually remembers her mother. She says it's just images, just feelings. Which goes along with Yoda's words to Luke in The Empire Strikes Back.
"Through the Force, things you will see, other places, the future, the past, old friends long gone."
So why would Yoda's words not to apply, why would they not apply to things seen as an infant? Now, in normal circumstances, we don't remember things that young, but we're talking about things seen through the Force, not physical memories. Could be that the Force-aided mind amplifies things seen only for a brief instant. Now, why is it Leia can conjure images of their mother and Luke can't? Obviously, females are more in touch with their feelings than males are, and Luke had always been more interested in the identity of his father anyway. So it's probably he just doesn't have the proclivity to get that sensation, to get those images and feelings. Now, what about Vader's knowledge of Luke? When does Darth Vader actually figure out that Luke is his son? He knows that the Force was strong with the person who destroyed the Death Star. He also probably heard through the intelligence chains that the name of the Rebellion's hero was Commander Luke Skywalker. And the crawl for The Empire Strikes Back states clearly that Vader was searching for him by name, young Skywalker. So naturally, Vader's probably curious to know whether or not he's a relation, perhaps a sibling he never knew, or a child of that sibling. Fortunately for Vader, the Emperor clears that up in The Empire Strikes Back.
"We have a new enemy. The young rebel who destroyed the Death Star. I have no doubt this boy is the offspring of Anakin Skywalker."
"How is that possible?"
"Search your feelings, Lord Vader. You will know it to be true."
At least a little more clear in the Ian McDiarmid version. Okay, while we're dealing with Vader, what about his sense of Leia?
"Your thoughts betray you. Your feelings for them are strong. Especially for..."
"Sith
sister. So, you have a twin sister. Your feelings have now betrayed her, too.
Why can't he sense a force connection with Leia, especially when he's torturing her in A New Hope and standing right next to her in the carbon freezing chamber? You would think that if he can sense Luke, he would sense the force in Leia. Well, both Luke and Leia lived their lives without knowledge of the force. Obi-Wan and Yoda taught Luke to harness it and awaken it, while Leia's was dormant for her whole life. She wouldn't have any reason to think to have the force or use the force or for the force to even be awakened in her. So I don't think it's people can sense the force in people who aren't using it, who haven't opened themselves up to it. That should not necessarily be taken as a contradiction between Leia seeing her mother through the force, because that is a very strong image, and in that moment the force would be stronger with her because she's drawing on her feelings, she's drawing on her memories, she's drawing on her mind, reaching a little deeper to bring up those images, to see those images. And, you know, in the carbon freezing chamber, she's not thinking about her mother. She's thinking about Han, how evil Darth Vader is, and, oh, woe is me, the galaxy is all going to pot. Now, if both Luke and Leia are spirited away after being born, how come Vader learns about one but not the other? Because one kind of blew up the Death Star. Speaking of the Death Star...
I will take the designs with me to Coruscant. They would have been much safer there than my master.
At the end of Revenge of the Sith, the larger framework for the Death Star has been built, and in A New Hope, it's fully operational. The detractors claim that there's no way it took 20 years to build it. Well, here in nearby Louisville, they're trying to paint a bridge. They're taking bids to hire the third company to try and build... paint a bridge, yes. Why can't they just get a bridge painted? It's beyond me, but it's taking forever. You know how long it takes to get a bridge built, let alone painted, or build a freeway interchange? Civil projects take a long time, and if it takes forever to build a bridge, how long do you think it takes to build a space station the size of a small moon? Granted, the Death Star was a military project, but money and laborers have to come from somewhere. Do you think the Emperor just ordered a batch of construction clones to build the thing? Doubtful. The clones were too useful being off bringing security to the Galactic Empire. As far as we know, the bureaucrats still held sway in the Imperial government until the station was operational. After that point, the Emperor had no reason to care, so he dissolved the Senate. But during that time, he had to be accountable to a budget committee, don't you think? Now, budgetary and political concerns certainly could be enough, but I'm not done yet. How many planet-destroying superlasers had they developed at that point in time? Probably, say, zero? How long do you suppose it would take to create one? How long would it take to contain it in a spherical structure? How many tests did it take to make sure it didn't blow the whole thing? How many times did they blow the whole thing? If you ask me, 20 years is kind of being generous. And now another wonderful one, Ewoks defeating stormtroopers. How is it that an entire legion of the Emperor's finest troops were unable to defeat a stupid bunch of little furry things? Well, they weren't stupid, were they? They were pretty smart, I thought, kind of. I mean, they knew to cook their food first. Now, it wasn't necessarily an entire legion that they fought against. We don't know how many were left in the bunker, as when Han Solo says from the AT-ST,
"It's over, Commander. The rebels have been routed. They're fleeing into the woods. We need reinforcements to continue the pursuit."
And the commander then says,
"Send three squads to help. Open the back door, sir."
Well, how many squads were left behind? It's unlikely too many squads would fit in the bunker, and a lot of troops would hardly be removed from the bunker by the small strike force. You know, if they had to go in and with blasters blazing. In official sources, it has been written that the primitive minds of the Ewoks could not be sensed by the Emperor. Never mind that the actual number that makes up a legion of troops is never given, and we don't know the exact number of Ewoks. The only thing we know for certain is that the Emperor dispatched enough troops to defeat a rebel strike team, not a strike team and an entire tribe of Ewoks. And now it's time for the contradiction of all contradictions.
I've been wondering, what are midichlorians?
Midichlorians are a microscopic life form that resides within all living cells. And we are simians with them. Without the midichlorians, life could not exist, and we would have no knowledge of the Force. They continually speak to us, telling us the will of the Force. When you learn to quiet your mind, you'll hear them speaking to you.
In Star Wars, we learn of the Force as a mystical power, but it seems that in The Phantom Menace, George Lucas has turned it into a biological one. People say that it was not, after all, the Force that chose who would be an adept, but small microscopic sentient beings, and everything we ever learned about the Force was a crock. Well, witness what Obi-Wan says in A New Hope.
The Force is what gives the Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together.
Last time I checked, living things and energy fields are physical entities. They are clearly defined by the laws of physics. And everyone agrees that life has building blocks also. There are things that govern how our bodies work called cells. They are practically sentient beings, but they happen to take orders from our brain. Qui-Gon Jinn never needed the midichlorian count to tell that the boy was strong in the Force. He took the midichlorian count to discover whether further interest in Anakin was warranted or not. Using the Force was never magic, but merely the ability to manipulate the energy field. The ability happens to be based on one's sensitivity to communicate to the midichlorians through their feelings. It all works together if you let it. And nearly every supposed plot hole or continuity error can be explained if you think. Life is full of things we have to put together. Sometimes we find things that seem to contradict each other, but the more we think about it and learn about it, the more it fits. Just because stuff seems not to fit on the surface, why not use a bit of logic and make it work? George Lucas has done questionable things, yes, but he's not an idiot. Nobody revolutionizes the film industry the way he has and develops a series of movies that resonates in our deepest beings if he's an idiot. Have we become so shallow a society that any apparent contradiction is immediately accepted as such? Or have I become so convoluted in my thinking that I'll try to rationalize away any assault on my beliefs? Or have some Star Wars fans just become so jaded by the changes George Lucas has made to their Star Wars that they're looking for anything to criticize what they see as Lucas's assault on their childhood? I've told you what I think. Now you tell me what you think. By email, indianajim.podcast@gmail.com. You can send in your voicemails to 206-666-4639, 206-666-INDY. You can also send an MP3 file to that email address that I just gave you. You can Skype me at Indiana_Jim_. So for now, this is me saying goodbye, and may the Force be with you.